episode 94 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded August 7th, 2016. Crime time! Let's get this show rolling, folks.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Rolling.
It's crime time.
That's me cracking a whip.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
I thought it was lightning striking.
I'm not good with my sound effects. I watch Police Academy movies, and I keep trying to take notes. I can't really do it.
Michael, after watching those movies, you think you're good at those sound effects. So you try them out on your friends. No, you're not good.
You are not.
No good.
There's only one Michael Winslow, guys. Only one. That's his name, right?
There's a couple of them. Which one are you talking about?
The guy who makes a noise with his mouth.
The one who's the only one.
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Hey, folks. So we actually just kind of recorded a couple days ago, Randy.
You're ruining the magic of podcasting, Grant.
Well, I say the date at the beginning of the episode. I'm sure everyone like meticulously goes and they're like, oh, let me look at my calendar.
Yep.
This is when they recorded that.
Yeah.
Oh, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
The TV dude's Vinci code.
Yeah.
They recorded on such and such date.
They turned their little...
turn it around backwards.
Whatever you call it, cryptograph turner.
Yeah. Oh, that's good, because maybe someone's going to get my message that I'm asking for help, that I'm held captive here.
In your own home.
Yeah.
It's terribly sad. We appreciate that you let us in while you're held captive.
That's right.
Here.
I do. I'm definitely held captive in my own home. I am not in a special basement that Grant has constructed, so I only stay there to record about TV dudes and terriers. Please help me.
You shut up.
The upside down version of the basement.
He's joking, folks, by the way. Clearly a joke. I'll kill you. So we are talking about crime this week. We're talking about crime TV shows because we've been watching The Night Of over on HBO. And hey, wait a second, Randy. We have a guest here.
We do have a guest.
What? Scott has joined us once again.
I have joined you guys once again. I'm here.
And the last time you were here, we actually talked about the premiere of The Night Of. Right?
Yeah, and to be completely honest, I haven't watched it since I watched it for that episode.
Well,
so I got to marathon them all this weekend.
Dude, in a way, I'm very envious.
It's got to be pretty intense.
It is a show that I would love to marathon.
Well, I noticed that first episode. Well, I mean, we're going to talk about it later, but
yeah.
I got thoughts. I'm pacing on, you know, getting to watch them. Because I saw the first episode and then waited and then got the marathon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 2 through 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about a couple of other crime shows. I think we're actually just going to go to
we're
going to
do a little
advice.
Round robin. I'm going to pitch you guys on BBC crime dramas.
That's right. And convince us to add them to our busy TV schedules.
Oh,
I'm excited about that.
It's a tall order.
But before we get into all of that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And, of course.
And I'm Kyle.
That's right. And we got some house cleaning to do. First up, if you guys want to help out the site, there are two ways you can really do that. First way is to go over to iTunes and write us a review. Give us a 5-star rating, write us a review. That's a great way to help us out. It'll give us a little bit more visibility. And in exchange, we'll read your review here on the show. And you guys can write whatever you want. We don't have any of those this week. But we do have a second way you guys can help us out. That's over at patreon.com/TV Dudes. And what you can do there is, per episode, you can give a pledge, and you can give whatever you want. If you want to give us $100 per episode, that's madness. You have way too much money. And
we thank you for
$100.
Take
it from you.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that. You can give like $1, and that would add up to about like $3-4 a month, maybe. It's kind of a great deal because in exchange for you giving us $1 per episode, we give you bonus exclusive content that is exclusive. Only
yes.
You can get it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do little 30-minute minis that we'll talk about pop culture stuff. We talked last week. We talked about a bunch of shock television.
Yes.
We had an idea that we might have read an offensive script, do a live read. We couldn't really work it out.
Nope.
But that still might be on the docket. There might be other crazy things on the docket. So... It's well worth it for you guys to, I think, invest in the TV Dudes.
Yes.
Patreon.com/TV Dudes. And we want to thank this week, Mikkel Jorgensen. I hope I'm getting your name correct there. Thank you so much for joining.
Yes, thank you. And Grant, you forgot the third way people can help us.
Oh, yeah.
They can skywrite thetvdudes.com over the beach in the summer.
That's a very specific way you guys can help us.
But you can't. It is the third way.
That is, there's only three
the
ways.
The third and only way.
We don't really usually often talk about that.
No, it's ever. It's left out. But in the summer, it's very important.
It is.
Skywriting is 90% of our marketing budget.
So thank you guys so much for your support. If you guys like us on Facebook or on Twitter, once a week we put a little call out so you guys can ask us questions for the show. And we're going to do that right now. First question comes to us from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, "Hi, dudes. I usually watch the big Sunday shows on HBO, Showtime, FX, and AMC back to back to back with a pint or two of craft beer to cap off my weekend. Do you guys have any sort of TV watching ritual?"
See, I think the interesting question here is between you and me, Grant, because we're both dads with kids, and Kyle, who's a single dude.
Single guy.
So
what's the contrast?
So I know my answer. I'm curious, Kyle, if you have any...
Oh,
any...
I have a very specific answer for this.
Yes?
All right? Because, yeah, Sunday night's when you watch the TV, all right?
Blood sacrifices?
No.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I put a surgical glove on my right hand.
Uh-huh.
You guys think I'm making this up. This is not a bit. This is legitimately what I do.
Get
I put
a big old bucket of lotion.
No, I get a big old bucket of hot wings, and I eat hot wings with this gloved hand. And the reason I do that is so I can take the glove off and change with the remote.
Wow,
you're a goddamn genius.
I'm not an amateur, guys. I've been doing this for a little bit.
I got so nervous. I was on the button ready to bleep out whatever you were going to say you do with that glove. I'm glad it was just hot wings.
People come over and see me with this glove on, and they're like, "You're an idiot. Why are you eating hot wings with glove?"
It's no, like, man. You're a genius.
Sunday night TV. I got to mute for commercials. Come on.
So my answer is I watch whenever I can get the time. So all my watching is done pretty much late at night after my son has gone to bed and my daughter is still awake but in her room because she stays up all hours of the night during the summer. And so I'll close my door to my office and watch shows that they're not allowed to watch, like all the HBO shows or whatever's on FX. And it really, when you're a dad, the answer is whenever I can find time to sneak in a show is when I watch a show.
That's very true. The only show that I can think of that I would always watch with regularity and therefore, I guess, in a way, develop a ritual is Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, I always watch the night it comes out because that one's the big spoiler one.
Sure.
And my wife and I watch that, which, yes, like Randy's saying, get the kids in bed,
yeah.
Figure out all the logistics of that, and then sneak over to the living room and watch it with the subtitle super huge and the show really quiet so I can't appreciate any of the music or volume audio.
This year I was watching it at my cousin's house, and they have a new baby. So before every episode, my cousin's wife is like, "Kyle, do not raise your voice. Like, don't, you're going to get excited.
Shut the fuck
just
up.
Keep it down. Keep it down."
You know, I also have a ritual for Game of Thrones. My ritual is I'm working on Facebook until I realize it's Game of Thrones time. I yell at everybody about spoilers, and then I get off and watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah, your ritual is definitely, "Why'd you guys spoil that for me? Why am I so dumb that I'm always online getting spoiled?"
Yeah, I'm really dumb. You would think after like three or four you would learn, but every time I finally learn about 9th or 10th episode of the season, like, wait a minute, Game of Thrones is coming on. Get off Facebook, stop doing what you're doing, and watch the show.
You can't help
Run
yourself.
For the hills, hit the storm cellar.
I don't know. I do have one question related to this, though, and that is, do you guys ever do like, do you get together and watch people? Watch with people? Like,
I watch people. I watch you outside your window.
I know, we talked about that.
Yeah, okay.
But do you do like watch parties? Have you done that kind of thing?
You know, we had a great one this year while we were camping with my parents out at the lake. So my mom works for DirecTV, and this is so gratuitous, but she got a satellite put out at the lake. So
nice.
When we're camping, we can now watch Game of Thrones. And yeah, so the season
finale.
Like they
used to back in the day.
You're not savages.
Exactly. But no, we put the TV on top of a couple of coolers, and it was my brothers and sisters and just the whole family.
Yeah.
We all love the show, but we never get to watch together. So this
is that's cool.
Really fun. It just turned into everybody yelling at everyone else to like, shh. Stop talking.
Yeah, that is the
like,
danger.
You don't like the show like I like the show. You
start writing
up.
Cards and like, throw this person out of here.
Yeah.
Why don't we have an Alamo Draft House?
No,
here?
I didn't. My uncle never seen the show before. He just walked away. He was like, "This isn't even fun messing with you guys anymore. I'm so into this show right now."
I still remember, Grant, the last few episodes of Lost. I don't know if it was the finale, but we watched with a whole big group. Remember?
Yeah.
That was a blast.
And
I remember that too, but I was listening in on the show you guys were doing then.
Oh, because
every week No lie, I didn't even watch Lost. I just listened to the recaps every week. Kind of talking about before how I love spoilers. Like, you saved me so much time. There's so much TV.
That must have been just bonkers to listen to.
It was amazing.
I don't know,
and
weird.
Totally bonkers. Like,
I would go weird on
you were pretty comprehensive, though. Someone got you were the Wikipedia of Lost reviews.
You came loaded for bear.
Yeah. I was ready. I don't know. I can never go back and listen to this. I'm never going to. Never, ever. Next question comes to us from Dennis McElwain, who says, Homicide: Life on the Streets was a breath of fresh air that gave new life to cop shows. Can you think of any other shows that have saved a genre or subgenre from mediocrity? And then he has a little side note for you, Randy, probably.
Uh-huh.
My crotch is still feeling the real Rob pain. It is so good.
How are you watching Real Rob that your crotch hurts? What are you doing? No, you know what? Don't tell me.
He doesn't have a glove for his hands.
Another perfectly good reason for the glove.
By the way, I want that to be a saying that catches on. That guy ain't got no glove for his hot wings. I don't know what it would mean, but I think that's a great saying. Like, it's like the Southern, that dog won't hunt. I think we need to make that a thing.
We can try.
Everyone, all our listeners need to tell us what that saying could mean.
We'll sell t-shirts.
Yes.
TV dudes.
These guys don't have gloves for their hot wings. But in answer to his question, I was thinking about this. And there's nothing as direct as like Homicide sort of rescuing the cop genre to some extent. Although cop genre has been a pretty healthy genre. But Lost occurs to me because Lost suddenly opened up the gates for people to do sci-fi and that kind of thing on TV.
Yeah, sci-fi had not been a big thing since Sliders, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good like 10-year gap. Sliders, yeah. Like Sliders and X-Files. I mean, yeah. X-Files is sci-fi, a little bit horror.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Kind of its
but,
own thing.
But
yeah.
Lost allowed them to do sort of cerebral sci-fi. I mean, things like Person of Interest would not exist without Lost.
Person of Interest.
Fringe, obviously.
V. Terra Nova.
And then there's all the terrible ones that came out. But it also created a safe space for people to do sort of cool cerebral, like modern day sci-fi that's like not aliens and spaceships.
I could see the argument that we wouldn't have Game of Thrones without it.
I can see that argument too. Sort of event-based TV.
They're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Geeks like watching television?
Yeah. I think that's a good point.
I was going to say that Modern Family, I think, did a good spin on the wholesome family comedy.
Agreed.
Dramedy.
Yeah.
And it spun off a bunch more family-friendly ones and it made it enjoyable to watch one of those when it kind of grew tedious.
Yeah,
I think the whole TGIF era
like,
run all that stuff into
the
ground
for a
while. Well, you
look at The Middle, Goldbergs, Blackish. Those are all Modern Family, essentially. That's where that all came from.
Yeah. I mean, and it's been a consistent show style for a long time.
Right.
But
right. If you look at the Emmys,
that was a good one.
It's been the best comedy every year for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were talking about reality TV.
Yeah, no, I really liked your answer that you had earlier, because I was thinking, oh, so what genres are kind of in dismay? And
yeah,
reality TV always gets a
kind
bad
of mess,
rap.
Yeah.
But no, the cooking shows, specifically like Top Chef, some of the competition stuff. Although I imagine everywhere people are like, they have their one reality TV show where they're like, all the rest are crap.
Sure.
Except for my Top Model, you know?
But you know what?
Except for my Bachelor.
Top Chef also sort of created this sort of subgenre of cooking shows. Now, the Cooking Network and Food Network and all that did that. But
that's true.
Like Chopped.
Yeah.
And I guess, and to some extent, Man versus Food.
I mean, you could say that. What was the one that was right before it, though? Iron Chef.
Oh, Iron Chef. Yeah.
Iron Chef kind of established a little bit of a food game show thing.
Yeah, that's
you know
true.
The one I really got into was Master Chef on Fox.
Oh, yeah.
But Fox has like a reality TV show formula
where
they bait you at every commercial break.
Yeah.
And they got me. I knew it was just me watching the commercials, just total bait crap every time. But I just come back for, you know, another hit of who's next? You know, what are they going to cook?
My guilty pleasure reality show was So You Think You Can Dance.
Ooh.
I watched that last season. I fell completely in love with it because I like dance and I like that kind of thing. And then this year they did like So You Think You Can Dance Kids. And I'm like, fuck that.
I mean, I really think that the show that saved it was Survivor, though, initially.
But Survivor initiated it.
Mm.
I mean, Survivor was really the first big
reality
show.
It brought reality
show.
TV back, right?
From where?
Didn't we have reality TV before
No,
that?
Survivor was the big first reality show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always think of like Real World, but Survivor made it something interesting that people would watch.
Real World, Big Brother, that stuff.
Yeah.
Wasn't Big Brother around the same time as Survivor?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'll tell you what really did it for me on reality TV. Do you guys remember the Joe Schmo Show?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Oh, my gosh. So this is a reality TV show where everybody was an actor except for one guy, okay? So what they would do is they would constantly change the story around him. You know, like Kristen Wiig was on it. Is it Chris Hornsby from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the guy who plays Cricket?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy crap. No, Hornsby? I've never heard of this.
It's very old. But here's the thing. So they do this talent search. They get literally the nicest guy ever who he does, like, always does the good guy thing. They'll put a drama element in there where, you know, somebody's getting picked on. And then he will come in and save the day. But then they mess with him. Like, he'll be like, oh, I have a crush on so-and-so. Then the next episode, the guy he hates is sleeping with her.
Oh, my God.
So he'll be in the confessional booth crying, like, literally, like, I liked her so much. And then they get to the end of the show, and they're like, it was all fake. And the guy was just like, what the? He didn't want anything to do with it after that.
I bet he didn't.
He was pretty pissed.
They're lucky he didn't shoot up the studio.
Yeah. The Truman showed him. That's fucked.
It was the Truman Show, but for real. It was it was amazing.
That is kind of amazing.
One of those, like, with the mole as well.
Oh, yeah, the mole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one.
They had that one person that was, like, not in, that was an actor, and everyone was like, who is it? It was like kind of the flip of the Joe Schmo thing.
What about that reality show where the guy pretended to like TV for like 100 years and did a game show, and he was on a podcast with a guy, and then
are you a vampire? Revealed,
yeah.
100 years? Holy shit. All right, next question. Zach McLernan says, "What with most of the CWDC shows coming off a week previous season, what in general, Randy, and specifically, should the CW do to right the ship before it's too late?"
Okay, I have thoughts on this. You might be surprised. First of all, Supergirl is fine where it is. Supergirl's going to be fine, and I just hope they don't fuck it up.
You don't think they should fix some stuff? Make it less cheesy?
They are fixing some stuff in that by nature of moving to Vancouver, Cat Grant is going to be less of a presence on the show.
Aww.
And I love Cat Grant, but I think less of her is better.
Less is more.
Yeah. I do think that they probably should stay away from the will they, won't they with Jimmy and Kara, but I think they're pretty much done with that.
What about having that one alien character who looked terrible in the makeup? Maybe they should fix that.
Oh, Indigo? Yeah. She's done. She's gone. You have the, yeah, they should definitely talk to the Flash people about makeup and special effects and get their special effects a little more
especially
unlocked.
Especially Grodd and King Shark.
Yes,
man, those are rad.
Exactly. But in general, Supergirl needs less fixing. But what the CW needs is a lot less relationship drama. They need to acknowledge that every show on the CW doesn't have to be the CW formula.
Yeah.
Like the superhero shows, you don't need the relationship stuff. It's not, you don't need the will they, won't they. You don't need the constant back and forth of Felicity and Ollie and all that kind of stuff. Let Felicity and Ollie be together. That's what everybody wants, and it's more interesting. And stop trying to make Barry Iris happen.
Yeah.
Just acknowledge, because what, that's the one thing that Arrow did, and then they kept pulling back from, but they didn't keep trying to hook up Lauren and Ollie, because that was how it goes in the comics. Like Black Canary and Green Arrow together in the comics. But when they saw there was more chemistry with Felicity, they just decided to go with Ollie and Felicity, and that's the right move. When the actors don't have chemistry, don't try to force it because the characters blend together. That's one thing.
Yeah, and Iris is good, except for when they try and do romance.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
I like the actress. I like the character, but yeah, her whole thing with Barry is a mess.
Yeah,
stronger villains, obviously. I don't know how to do it because they had a great actor for the Arrow villain and they fucked it all up. But
can they
better
make
villains
them smart?
Yeah.
Like,
that would be good.
Zoom was just fucking dumb.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was.
What a waste.
Well, and that's
and inconsistent powers.
Consistent powers, consistent plan.
Yeah.
Like, the plan for Dark and Arrow was all over the map. It changed every episode. So that brings my other thing, which is shorter arcs. Don't do a 22 episode arc. Do 3.
Yeah.
Do 3 8 episode arcs or 3 7 or 6 episode arcs.
Mm, okay.
Shorter arcs. Let the characters be their best selves. Don't force Felicity to play dark and angsty. Let Felicity be the light and funny one. That's her role.
Yeah.
Don't make Ollie be like the loner guy when he's best as a leader of a team.
Make sure Cisco's still giving the names to every character.
Yeah, don't tell. don't do a dark story with Cisco. Don't do a story.
Or his doppelganger. That
or
was
his
terrible.
Doppelganger. And they're I can already tell they're doing this. They're going to do it wrong because I've seen the trailer.
Flashpoint, yeah.
But like, let Barry be happy and enjoy using his powers and do good for good's sake. Don't angst him up. Like,
no, they're going to angst him.
Let the characters let the character do his best stuff. let the character be the best version of themselves. I understand you want drama and certainly you want conflict, but you can do that without undercutting the characters.
I love that they're going to keep like resetting the timeline.
Yeah.
And he's going to be like a 50-year-old trying to pretend he's still 20.
Okay, so this is a thought I had, and I don't know why no one had this thought. Barry can't change the time stream, right? He can't save his mom. We know that. It causes all kinds of paradoxes. It causes Flashpoint, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Could Barry go back in time and, assuming he can't bring his mom back forward in time, like that's assume he can't do that, because that's the easy solution, right? He grabs her, he moves
just
forward.
Just creepy hang out with a
He moves her forward in time so that he comes back. She's alive in 2016, but she's still been missing the whole time. It's as if she was dead. It's the same thing. It doesn't fuck up the timeline, right? It doesn't fuck up the past.
Just fucks her up.
But so if he can't do that, if you assume he can't do that, he goes back a day before it all happens and says, "Hi, listen, I'm your son." Proves it all to her. You're going to have to fake your death and reemerge in 2016. Do that.
If Doctor Who was here, he'd say this is probably a fixed point in time
that it'd have to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I can't explain why, but this is just one of those things you can't change right now.
This is an important one.
I'm just saying there are ways other than fuck it. I'm just going to screw up the timeline because I want to save my mom. I think a little bit of thought from the guy who's a scientist could have done better than I'm just going to go ahead and save her.
Yeah, but wonder if he could just go back in time and just like hang out with his mom for an afternoon.
Yeah,
because that's really all you need. It's just like, you know, an afternoon once a week.
Hey, hey mom, how's it going? With the dinosaur, the good dinosaur, or whatever.
Yeah, and what if they hang out and he's like, you know what? I don't actually like her all that much.
Yeah.
And then
I'll come back to
it.
Visit. I got superpowers and stuff. I can spin this back.
Better off without her. It all works out. Okay.
Best thing that could happen.
Focus on the action, which is what they do well. Mm-hmm. So they need to focus on doing the action well. Less motorcycle stunts for Arrow would be nice, because we get it. They new motorcycle stunts.
Can I ask a question about Arrow and Flash? Yeah. Actually, CW shows in general. Do they do a lot of one-off stuff?
Not really. Everything tends to be...
Make it one or two.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not a bit... I'm way behind, but... That one-off stuff, especially in like older Doctor Who, like some of your best villains just come from giving a newer writer just, you know, some creative freedom to do something a little out there.
Yeah.
It can breathe new life into a show.
Well, and it's...
King Shark was a one-off. It was...
to some extent, yeah.
They kind of like put a pause on a lot of the story points just to have like a Jaws kind of...
Well, and that's... The other thing is that's consistent with comics. Comics have always had one-issue stories. I think you're right. And the Doctor Who model is a good idea. The sort of... Every so often, let somebody do a blink with Flash.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. So those are my thoughts.
I think that Captain Cold and Firestarter, they need
Heat
to hook
wave.
Up. Heat Wave. I think they should hook up.
Like, they should hook up?
I'm shipping them.
Okay.
That's my fix. There you go.
Okay.
Why gotta be all in their relationship business?
I just, if we're going to have relationships, those two, they got some chemistry between them. It's like they were Prison Break brothers for a while or something. Alejandro Rey Zapata says, if you could have any old crime show come back for just one more season, what would it be? He wants the OG Law and Order to come back.
Ooh.
Mm.
For its 75th season, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I guess so. So what would you pick?
I'm gonna stand in for Greg here and say that I want one more season of The Wire.
Really?
Yeah.
What would you do?
I'd go back to Baltimore and see what it's like now.
It's so it's all gentrified. It's like,
is it really? Because
no,
I don't think
it is.
But I think that's the thing. I don't think Baltimore's gotten much better. Or what I really want is David Simon to do a sequel set in modern-day Detroit.
Mm.
Like, examine Detroit in the same way he examined Baltimore. I don't know if he could. He might not be the guy to do it, but I want someone to do that.
I mean, that was his city.
Yeah. But I would like to see, I'm sure you could see interesting things in sort of what happened to those characters, what happened to the city, you know, that kind of thing. And the last season of The Wire is the weakest season of The Wire, so I'd kind of like to see a stronger finale.
What about you, Kyle?
You know... Crime show, maybe not a crime drama. and I'm totally going to get mixed reactions, but you guys remember The Good Guys with Bradley Woodford and Colin Hanks?
Okay. The Good Guys is on my list of stuff I need to watch.
Okay. Oh my God, I kill for
I'm sure it's great.
This show.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm super into it. But yeah, when it comes to the drama stuff, like we were talking about BBC dramas before the show, and I could think of two or three off the top of my head, and then I looked them up on IMDb, and they have seasons that have come after that. We just haven't gotten them over here.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh man, I wish for, like, one of them is The Line of Duty. Definitely another season of that, which I think is out there. I just haven't caught it. But also the Kenneth Branagh Wallander. I could have definitely used another season of that.
Okay.
It's based off a book series, so I'm not sure if the books continue. But yeah, I definitely think he can age and that character can still be relevant.
Didn't you guys watch The Unusuals? It was Harold Perrineau, Jeremy Renner.
Uh-uh.
It was Noah Hawley running it.
Huh.
No.
It was a cop show on, I want to say, ABC. My buddy Nick from work always talks about it and says it was great. It did not do great in the ratings, and it was canceled. And this is funny because it was Jeremy Renner on TV before he became a movie star.
Yeah.
And Noah Hawley pre-Fargo. Like, it should have been. And I can't believe it's not streaming anywhere because I want to watch it now.
I feel like Renner's a fluke.
You think?
Like how he became a movie star. I feel it's a fluke. He was in that one war movie.
The Town, though. Remember that?
Town.
Town was the shit.
Yeah, he was good in it. But I don't know. I it's weird that he got where he is.
Okay.
Because I don't feel like he carries himself as a star in a way.
No.
Well, he's just full of gaffes.
That's Catherine true. Bigelow movie was good too. But yeah,
that's the one I was.
He was definitely like a one track character.
Hurt Locker.
What was it? Hurt Locker.
Yeah,
that's it.
I would bring back Hannibal for one more season.
Oh man.
Mm. Ooh.
Is that crime? If that counts, that's my answer.
It's gotta be crime, right?
I changed my answer. That's it. That's my answer.
Yes. Last question. Daniel Wallace says, "Hello, dudes. Who are some of your favorite directors of crime?" And then he goes on to list my favorite directors.
Yeah, he got two of mine, too.
He says, "Personally, I always enjoyed Guy Ritchie and Martin Scorsese."
Both great.
Those are perfect answers.
Kyle, you got any others?
Oh, yeah. What is his name? I'm going to totally screw it up. Guy Ritchie, I don't know if you'd call him a protege, but the guy who did Layer Cake.
Matthew Vaughn. Yeah, a.k.a. X-Men First Class is Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah, X-Men First Class and Kick-Ass, which people were mixed on that.
And Kingsman,
which is
a great action movie. I've got a few. Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
Fargo, No Country, Blood Simple, Miller's Crossing. I mean, and then some stuff that's adjacent, like Big Lebowski. Coen Brothers are some of my favorite crime guys.
Yeah.
Michael Mann for Heat alone.
Okay, yeah.
Tarantino.
Because Michael Mann, otherwise, I'm mixed bag.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? Collateral is a flawed movie, but it's a really interesting movie, and it's more that Will Smith playing somebody different a little bit. Which is a conversation we had off mic. But
is he in Collateral?
He is in Collateral, right? No, that's Jamie Foxx.
You're talking about
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise movie,
Tom
right?
Cruise, yeah. Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx.
What were you thinking of with... Oh, with Will Smith and Gene Hackman.
Yeah, Enemy of the State.
Enemy of the State.
Tony Scott. I love Tony Scott, but he is not a great crime director.
I do not like Tony Scott.
I love Tony Scott. He did. Tony Scott does True Romance. I love True Romance, which is the best Tarantino movie. It's not Tarantino. Two others... And they're another one movie person, Bryan Singer for Usual Suspects. Usual Suspects is a great crime movie. And Brian De Palma because of Scarface and Untouchables.
Yeah.
Those are both great crime movies.
Then Bryan Singer went and made those X-Men movies. I'm so mixed on those.
And he did Way of the Gun, which I've heard is terrible.
Oh my gosh. I worked at Blockbuster when that came out. It was awful.
Was that was Bryan Singer, wasn't it? Or was the writer from Usual Suspects?
Oh.
It wasn't Bryan Singer. It was the writer from Usual Suspects.
That was the Ryan Phillippe movie?
Yeah, I've heard that's terrible.
I think, Ryan Phillippe was in that. Oh, man.
That sucked.
And by the way, one more, if you want to go old school, Sidney Lumet, who did Dog Day Afternoon and Serpico. Those are two great crime movies. So, Grant, you remember that episode, Randy Was Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked that episode. That was my favorite episode.
Do you enjoy that episode?
I listen to it every week.
Randy,
What's going on? What's the news?
So you might remember that we were talking a little while ago that George R. R. Martin had another property called Wild Cards.
Wild Cards.
It's a superhero universe.
You were discussing this.
I was.
This was with the guy from It's Always Sunny?
Wild Card. Yes. it's a series of novels. It was an anthology. It had a bunch of people. He was one of the co-editors along with Melinda Snodgrass. And it was like adult, mature readers like superhero stuff with a sort of historical bent to it. It was really great stuff, and I thought it would make a perfect TV show. Mm-hmm. And you know what else? So did Universal, because they are adapting Wild Cards into a TV show.
Randy, you were right again.
I was right again.
Oh, well, that's exciting. Who's it with?
So it's Universal Cable Productions.
Universal, okay. Where would that go?
Martin says the development will get underway right away. He says he won't be working on it himself. He says, my own development deal is exclusive to HBO, and I'm writing The Winds of Winter. But I have every confidence in Melinda Snodgrass and Gregory Novak, who are both people involved with Wild Cards. Nice. They know and love the Wild Cards almost as well as I do, and I think they will do a terrific job. Wish them luck. The question I have is, if it's not going to be on HBO, where's it going to land? Because this can't be on basic cable. This has got to be on Stars or Showtime or one of those. It's got to have the full-fledged...
You know who's got the money for it?
Who's that?
Amazon.
Oh, Amazon, yeah.
Amazon's got that money.
Unfortunately, Amazon hasn't done anything great yet.
That's why they're in the market.
Yeah. Amazon or Netflix, I'd be great with. I don't know where Universal goes. I don't know where Universal Cable goes. But as long as it's not on basic cable, as long as they're able to do it sort of
It's going to be on the PlayStation Network, man. You're going to be fine.
Oh, my God. Nothing's ever going to be on the PlayStation.
They got an open slot now.
Nothing is ever going to be on the PlayStation Network again. I promise. All right. Another bit of rumor that's exciting. Star Wars live action TV series possible at ABC. So there's not a lot we know about this.
They keep trying for this. This has been in the rumor mill for like the past 10 years, it seems
yes.
like. Yes. But... I'm still open to it.
Oh, yeah. So, ABC Network president Channing Dungey, which, by the way, great name.
Yeah.
Explained during the TCA, the television critics upfronts, said, as a fan, I would absolutely love to say yes to a Star Wars universe show. We have had conversations with Lucasfilm and we'll continue to have conversations with them. I think it would be wonderful if we could find a way to extend that brand into our programming. It's all a little bit hush-hush. That company exists under a big shroud of secrecy. If you feel Marvel is secretive, Lucas takes it to a whole other level. Talks are ongoing. We don't really have an official timeline yet. That's a lot of obfuscation, but he never said no. He also never said yes.
Never said no, Randy.
Never
said no. It's all about what he didn't say.
What does that mean?
No.
I don't know where that was going.
What's the next story?
Moving on, Star Trek. So TCAs are going on, and this was not actually the TCAs, though. This is Ain't It Cool News talk to Brian Fuller, and... We have a little more tidbits on Star Trek Discovery, which I don't know about you guys. I get more and more excited about every day.
Oh, yeah.
I really want this to be good.
I'm in the Randy camp on this. I that'd make my day.
Yeah, I want it to be good. I don't know if I believe it can be, but I want it to be good. So recent reports point to a female captain, possibly a non-white of ethnicity. And more importantly, though, the timeline seems to have been figured out. There's a big clue in the number of the ship, NCC 1031, that indicates where we're set, is what Fuller said. And people have been speculating on this. Because 1031 is before 1701, and that would assume that it is prior to the original Enterprise stuff.
Well, especially if he says that's the clue.
Yeah.
Because it could be like, oh, maybe they made 1,000 ships in a batch at one point.
When you say Enterprise stuff, are you talking about Captain Kirk or like the Quantum Leap guy?
Captain Kirk.
Okay.
The speculation is that this takes place between the original Enterprise show, what's the name of Quantum Leap guy?
Yeah.
Scott Bakula. Stuff and the Star Trek.
It's not that bad. I kind of got into a little bit of that.
I've only watched a few episodes of. I never watched much of it. But this would put them in the early days of the Federation, which I think is a cool idea. And then sort of rough Discovery, all that kind of stuff. I love the idea of sort of more frontier Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. You know, side note, did you see that William Shatner thing on Facebook this weekend?
Yes, where he acknowledged that Star Wars was responsible for Star Trek. Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a neat rationale, because, I mean, that movie did really well, and then the film franchise kind of brought Star Trek back. So.
Yeah, I think he's right.
Yeah.
Star Wars is better
all around.
yeah, that's what he said. Star Wars is better, and anyone who doesn't think so should fight him.
Yeah,
if you see him, just punch him. If you think Star Wars,
punch him right in that big nose of his.
And then the other thing that Fuller said, there is something Starfleet's covert wing called Section 31. I've never heard of this. I'm not deep enough into Trek lore. Anybody know anything about this?
Mm-mm.
But what's apparently, Fuller said, there are aspects of our first season that, depending on how well-versed you are in that mythology, you could either read into it a connection or not. That is the biggest non-answer I've ever heard. But this is the first I've heard of Section 31, and the ship does look sort of Klingonish.
Oh, I don't know what that means. It looks like an air filter for a car to me.
I know what you mean. You're talking about that bit on the top.
Well, the color and the way that the nacelles are down below instead of up top, it looks more like a Klingon ship than
a bird
of
prey.
Is that
what that is? Yeah.
And I'm wondering, is it possible this is like going to be going into Klingon territory? I don't know. All speculation, but interesting.
I don't know anything about Star Trek. I've never watched any of the shows.
Well, here's what Star Trek is about.
I did watch a movie.
There are guys in it. There are some guys. One of them has pointy ears.
Chris Pine.
Yes, one Chris Pine. And they go out and they boldly explore what is out there in space.
Did you ever see SeaQuest?
Mm-hmm.
It was like SeaQuest, but in space.
But in space, yeah.
Oh, okay. I am on board.
Yeah. Which SeaQuest was just Star Trek, but underwater.
Yeah. Oh, do you know the show Road Rules, where like they drive motorcycles across the country?
Yeah, I love Road Rules.
It's like that, but in space.
This sounds fun. I'm excited for the different challenges.
I want to do a whole segment where we explain what Star Trek is like to Grant, but, but we don't have time. So
guys would have to explain it to me in space.
In space. Yeah. Finally, the TCA Awards. I mentioned that happened. The Critics Awards, I think you guys know my feeling on awards.
Yeah, you hate them.
They're all bullshits.
Yeah.
The Critic Awards are a little less bullshit because at least it's people who know TV that well.
Mm-hmm.
The TCAs were interesting because there's a lot of stuff on here. Like, I don't think any one show like swept it.
Because they love the People versus OJ.
Yeah. They gave Individual Achievement in Drama to Sarah Paulson from People vs. OJ.
Awesome.
And they gave Outstanding Achievement in Movies, Miniseries, and Specials to People vs. OJ.
And Program of the Year.
Which is pretty big.
I love that they gave Outstanding Achievement in Drama to the Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. They gave that to Americans. Outstanding Achievement in Comedy to Black-ish, which I thought was interesting.
Mm.
That's a network show, and that's rare for critics for the TCAs.
And Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is getting a shout out in youth programming.
I've never seen it. You watch it?
I do, actually. That's
okay.
Pretty good.
My wife's seen it a little bit with the kids. So,
you know, bringing it back to crime, Making a Murderer is on here.
Yep.
Talk about like new types of reality programming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then their Outstanding Achievement in News and Information is Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, which I don't know about you guys right now if you're watching Full Frontal, but
I'm catching her on the internet. I'm getting the clips.
Yeah, I only get the clips.
Oh, man.
He's getting the clips.
I actually like it better than John Oliver right now.
No way!
Yeah, I love John Oliver.
That is exciting.
But I love Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. It's a different thing.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really love that show. I love
that sells me. I'm checking it out.
It's so good. Yeah. Her convention coverage alone has been fantastic. So, and then Individual Achievement in Comedy went to Rachel Bloom for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I did not realize that Rachel Bloom was the one who did that Fuck Me Ray Bradbury video.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Which I loved, and I thought she was A, hot, and B, really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, where's more of that girl? And now I really, really want to watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I've heard is great.
Everyone keeps raving about it.
It's a comedy. It's a musical. I love musicals.
Oh,
so
never mind. I'm out. I hate musicals.
You're one of those guys.
Ugh, they're the worst.
Hey, can I back it up real quick to that Star Trek story?
Yeah, yeah.
Great Star Trek captain. Actor and character, the police chief from Stranger Things. Ooh, putting him on a spaceship.
Oh, yeah, I'd watch that.
Yeah.
David Harbour, is that his name?
Yeah. But you know what?
Newsroom. Yeah.
You know what the thing is, though? Yeah. Other than Stranger Things, he always plays the second fiddle guy. Mm-hmm. Like on Newsroom, he was the boring, stiff anchor. So here's what's going to happen. He'll be the captain, and then the new female captain will come in and will take over and do a better job than him.
Yeah.
Or the whole story will be about, it'll be like Veep. Like, it'll all be about her.
Yeah, it'll all be about her and how terrible he is at his job. Oh, I couldn't see Star Trek, but I would love a show that was sort of like the Kiff and Captain Zap Brannigan from Futurama, where the captain is this Kirk-esque blowhard, and the one getting everything done is his like female adjutant, like number one.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean.
Like, I could totally like a Veep, but in space.
That would be a hilarious side character in this new Star Trek show.
Yes, we should get that. In the TV Dude system, there are two separate yet equally important groups. Grant and Randy, who haven't watched as much British TV, and Kyle, who has watched a ton of British TV. These are his attempts to convince us to watch British TV.
That was really corny.
That was terrible.
Your Honor, I would like to object. Can we retract that that introduction from the record?
So, Kyle, yeah, you're going to run through a couple of different British shows you've watched. Is it all British?
Okay, actually, so this first one, I think it was produced by the BBC, but it actually takes place in Sweden.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's Brit-ish, but it's actually Swedish.
Yeah.
Ish.
It was English-ish.
Yes, English-ish.
I could understand what they were saying. No subtitles. Actually, no. Wallander, lots of like Russian bad guy characters, or like just the foreign guy is always the villain.
Yeah.
But Wallander, it's
Sean Bean?
No, that is Kenneth Branagh.
Ah.
There's actually two versions of this that are on Netflix right now. A version with Kenneth Branagh, and then another version that actually has more episodes, but I haven't seen it yet. But what's so captivating about the story with Wallander is the place that they're at, it's very isolated. And because of laws over there, they don't have the kind of weapons we have here in America. So especially when a violent crime happens, backup isn't really close. You know,
they have is rubber band guns.
Well, you know, a lot of times it's an older guy with, you know, it's like Kenneth Branagh with the gray, scruffy facial hair who is, you know, showing up on the scene with just a pistol. And then he finds like
a stern look,
really just disturbing, you know, like human trafficking crimes, just like really scary crimes that are almost escalated, for me at least, because it's in a different country. You know, you see it around the corner from your house, and then you can only see enough of that before you're like a little desensitized.
Yeah, I'm used to all the human trafficking in my neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean,
all the Pokemon.
All the Pokemon trafficking in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
The Bulbasaur Railroad. Oh, jeez. But yeah, you definitely get this feeling like this is a foreign place, and if something happens, it's not. And they have a few moments in the show where they just flip a switch, kind of, I think the Wirehead moments like this, where you just go and then it changes everything on the show just in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
Try not to spoil it, but...
So is this like 6 episodes or...?
It's 4 mini-series.
So it's sort of like the Sherlock format where it's like longer episodes?
Longer episodes. I don't have a running time in here, but like 3 episodes per season.
Okay.
And it really, it has kind of an epic feel to it because the character ages throughout the show. It's based off a book.
Ah.
And, you know, like the final season is definitely kind of like his Clint Eastwood. So, like seeing Kenneth Branagh.
So racist, kind of really racist?
Very racist.
Just yelling at chairs.
Actually, a lot of the bad guys are pretty racist. I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, and then like earlier seasons, it's kind of, you know, him doing his thing. But he's got personal problems and he's also got, you know, these crazy crimes to deal with. Kind of like... You know, another one of our favorite British detectives, DC Luther.
Oh, yeah.
I feel Greg's spirit has entered the room.
Oh, my gosh.
Get
you guys.
Here,
Greg loves Luther.
Every time he would get brought up on TV Dudes when I was listening, I'd always be like, oh, turn it up.
Yeah.
That's my show.
So Luther, what, it's on his 4th season now?
Yeah, we got 4 seasons, it looks like.
Are you caught up now?
I am on season 3, I believe.
Okay, I think that's where I left off.
Yeah.
Too.
Although the first season had, I think, 7 or 8 episodes, and then they went to this, you know, less episodes format.
I feel like the first one only had a few episodes, too, like maybe 6?
Yeah, I think, it was 6 episodes in the first season, and then
like
4.
And 4.
In the
so,
second one.
Here's our question. Are they still filming Luther? Or is this like they're just still dribbling out the stuff from England that was done a while back? Because
they filmed it again, and I mean, each season is kind of like, do we feel like doing it again? I feel like it's always like the Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of model of like, do I feel like it?
Idris Elba is not unbusy. He's being the gunslinger.
Yeah, but he kind of loves this.
Yeah.
He loves this show. This was his baby.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Actually, no, I take that back. So December 5th, 2015. So yeah, this last year they shot the 2 episodes for this season 4. But man, you know, some of my favorite stuff in here. Did you guys see the arc with the psychotic twins?
No.
Yeah.
So they have a story where it's just these 2 twins where in Oh, gosh. Spoiler alert. Sorry. Let me throw that on there. Well, I guess if you don't know where it's coming from, yeah, it might not be spoiled, but you don't know the guy's a twin until the end of the episode.
Oh, okay.
And then his twin does just as nasty, like crazy. Luther's also very violent. Just like all the crimes in there.
It is a rough show. Yeah. It's so dark and twisted. I mean, I can't recommend this one enough as well. It's so sickening, and at the same time, it's so innovative with the crime stories.
Oh yeah,
it's bizarre, and it's almost surreal and beautiful. It kind of reminds me of Hannibal in a way, with how they would shoot some of those scenes, but less fantastical, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's grounded, it's gritty, but yeah, it's
you know, a compelling. Little shout out to like a production thing on the show. The way they do their credits every episode is they get a super creepy song and they will like play the song. They'll cut to a black screen. And then just a second from next week's episode, like a really violent crime happening, you know, maybe a girl getting dragged through the hallway. And then like, then it'll be a title card with some names and you'll get like maybe four or five of these just 1 second clips from next week's episode. And it's really creepy.
Brutal.
And yeah, just sets the tone of the show and kind of the mood.
I really need to catch up on Luther. It's definitely one of those that's on my list.
You know, not to pull away too much from your list of recommendations, but I happened to check out a show as well on Netflix called Marcella. And I wanted to give a shout out to this show as well and recommend it because it stars Anna Friel, who you guys would probably be familiar with from Pushing Daisies.
Yeah.
She was Chuck from Pushing Daisies.
No way.
Yeah.
And love Pushing Daisies.
Apparently, she's British. I didn't know this.
Oh, that makes sense.
She was in Limitless, right?
And that was she was taking our jobs.
Yeah. She plays a detective who has been out of the field for a while, and she gets pulled back in because of a familiarity with a case that she had worked on some years back. A murderer they thought they caught has resurfaced, and so she's back on the case, kind of investigating it. But you realize that a lot of terrible stuff has happened in her personal life in the time being, and she's not a really reliable narrator for us, the audience, because she has her own issues. And so when these murders, like these murders start happening again, you're not sure if she might be a part of it or not. It gets really crazy.
Interesting.
And it, like how it wraps, like every, like, yeah, each episode it gets more and more complex, and it's really well done.
Is this a French show?
No, it's British.
British, okay.
Yeah.
Because I want to mention a French show that I've watched. I've only watched the first episode, but it's a 6-episode season. It's on Sundance, is the people who brought it over, called Last Panthers.
And I saw a bunch of trailers for that.
It's an international jewel thieves. And like I said, I've only seen the first episode. I have the whole thing. I just haven't had a chance to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a really harrowing opening sort of jewel heist thing. And then this bit where they sort of go to Croatia to try to sell the gems. And man, it is an interesting look at sort of international crime. If you don't mind subtitles, it's a great watch.
Nope, I'm out.
Okay.
I'm illiterate. I'm out.
No, it looked really good. You know, one that you're in the first season of, but you haven't come over to the second season yet, is BBC's Broadchurch with David Tennant.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, what is her name? She's so brilliant.
I remember Coleman from Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And she's funny as hell in that. But yeah, she's so good in this.
I fell in love with her on Peep Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. She did a lot of work on that.
That's what I'm saying. She does comedy. Mm-hmm. But then she comes in and pulls this drama. Like, I mean, same thing with Tennant. Tennant is so good as Doctor Who in this sort of quirky role. And you could see him do drama. But you didn't know he had this sort of dark performance in him.
Agreed. Very complex character that he played there.
I remember the first season rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. Because it was such a whodunit back and forth that it almost became a bit comical to me for a while.
All right.
Because like each scene it seemed to end with like someone raising their eyebrow or like skulking off into the shadows, like, what is that person up to? I'm like, all right, what's going on here?
But that's because the show wasn't really about the crime as much as it was that this whole town was full of secrets.
Yeah. Yeah.
This little English town was full of secrets and everybody had done something.
It just kept escalating to the point where it was absurd. Everyone was so shady.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful to watch. Like, such great cinematography on it.
And whoever it ended up being,
It was like her husband.
Yeah.
Sorry, spoiler. Maybe.
Spoiler alert.
someone's husband. But anyway, I was just like, what?
But see, that's the thing. Is it like, it wasn't so much about the crime as about what's going to happen. Like what, all these relationships that were destroyed and that kind of thing for me. I never got to the point where I was like, oh, this is just silly now. Because I was always like, oh man, there's so much fucked up stuff going in this town.
Man, I thought it was silly and it just wallowed in bleakness a bit too much for my
taste. Well, you know, I think I could fall like in between you guys because I never got to the point where I was like giggling at it, but I did think, all right, enough is enough. Like you put these guys through the ringer, like what happens next?
It was like really heavy too.
So yeah, that's my question to you without going too into spoilers is how do you follow? Because it was a great season one, but I don't know how you follow up in season two.
Well, that was my thing. I was like, this doesn't work as a second season. They already
space, Randy.
Oh, it's in space.
It's in Star Trek.
Broadchurch in space. David Tennant's back in the box for season two of Broadchurch.
In space.
In space. No. So what they did is the second season has two storylines kind of going simultaneously. The first one is the trial for the guy they caught in the first season.
Yeah.
Because in the very first episode, you find early on where he confessed to the crime at the end of the first season.
Yeah.
He takes it back.
Oh, man.
And he makes him go through the whole rigmarole to prove that he did it. Yeah. And it's bringing up all that old drama with the town. Yeah. Like people are at each other's throats again.
Yeah.
And the character of Ellie Miller, played by Olivia Colman. I mean, she's just kind of, because the reveal of the first season, spoilers, is that her husband did the murder.
Yeah.
So, like, nobody wants anything to do with her.
Right.
But at the same time, you find out that even in season one, David Tennant has still been working on that case from before the show started. The case that he was famous for messing up. And this has been, like, his obsession, and he hasn't let it go. So if I remember correct, it's been a little while since I saw this, but Olivia Colman kind of jumps in with him towards the beginning because she's more or less been demoted to, I think, like a traffic cop or desk job, something like that. So they're just on the side trying to follow this murder, and they introduce some new characters that have to do with that murder. From Torchwood, who is the girl?
It's not Eva Miles, is it? The lead from Torchwood? Or is it somebody else?
Yeah, the lead.
Yeah, I think Eva Miles is her name.
Okay, so she comes on the show and she's very closely tied with the murder from, I guess, the prequel murder.
I like her.
Yeah, she comes on, and then this guy who plays kind of like the main suspect of the murder, which IMDb is awful at these headshots. And then in season two, you got James Darcy, who is just phenomenal as this character who, at points, you're like, he did it. He's the bad guy. He did it. This is your guy.
He's twirling that mustache a bit too much.
But, I mean, then lots of shots of him, like, you know, pounding fence posts in on, like, the, you know, countryside.
Being
all
aggressive.
In a wife beater. Like, oh, yeah, that's a bad guy.
You know, I loved him in Agent Carter, so I'm down. I'm in.
No, and these new characters, and then how kind of the drama of we're trying to solve this other murder mixes with the fact that they have this trial going on, and everybody in this community is involved in this trial. It gets really exciting, and I don't know if I can say I like the second season more than the first season, but not only did I enjoy it kind of on the same pacing, like I was watching it week to week when it came out, but I felt like, no, they hit that same bar. Like it was some of those same great moments with the storytelling.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Well, okay. Then tell me about this last one, The Line of Duty.
So I won't talk long about this one. I feel like I've been rambling about these things, but this has Lenny Bruce. Is that his name?
Lenny James.
Lenny James.
Lenny Bruce is the comedian.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah. No, Lenny James from The Walking Dead and, I mean, tons of other stuff.
Low Winter Sun, for anyone who remembered that.
No one remembers that show.
Fair enough.
But he plays this just kind of like the perfect police chief, you know, who's been decorated with all these awards. I think the first season in the show is him, like, you know, taking some perp out with one arm tied behind his back who just tried to rob a woman with her purse. Like, he's just seems like the perfect cop. And in come some internal affairs people.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Nobody likes internal affairs. Nobody likes internal affairs. They come in, and we got to bring him down. And I think my favorite line from the show is him saying, the police chief, you take a shot at the king, you better kill him, son.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's kind of like the Shield. Vic Mackey.
Yeah, a little bit. In every episode,
he's a bad dude who gets results.
Well, I definitely give that description to Luther. Like, he's a guy who, he'll cross any line.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of conflict in this character where he wants to walk the straight line. And he wants, like, those times where he messed up to not be a big deal.
Yeah.
But once the bad guys know what you've done, I mean, yeah. You're in it.
The you line of it. Duty, he's trying to walk the line. I get it. Okay, yeah. I get the... Yeah, that's clever.
That's good.
But yeah, it mostly revolves around...
Randy, don't look at me that way.
Too good.
You've been podcasting with this simpleton for a very long time. You know this. Okay, well, let's move on to talk about The Night Of over on HBO, because... Is this an 8-episode miniseries?
It's an 8-episode miniseries. We're past the halfway point.
How? Oh, no. Like, they haven't hit a trial or anything?
We should say spoilers first. Spoilers for episodes 2 through potentially 5.
Yeah, we were able to watch episode 5. Well, two of us. Randy and I were able to watch that.
Yeah, I totally screwed Kyle on our prep, and he thought we were watching 5.
I was watching that show, Difficult People.
Yeah.
It's kind of cute.
So it's very similar.
It's no night. Oh, wait. It's similar? Okay, good.
Yeah, very, very much the same show.
So, you know... I'm assuming most of you listening to this do watch the show. Otherwise, you might want to skip, because I wholeheartedly recommend this show.
Oh my God, it's so good.
It's each hour is just more compelling than the last. And I was telling Kyle, you said you got to binge the three episodes today and yesterday.
Weird.
And it's so good. And every episode after it ends, I get angry. I don't have another one to watch. And they know how to end on just the perfect note, it seems like, each episode.
So I want to talk about John Turturro.
Yeah.
Because Turturro's not really in the first episode that much. When we talked about the first episode, we're like, oh, it looks promising, but we don't really know what he's doing.
And this was the Gandolfini character, apparently.
Yeah, and I can't watch the show without thinking what this would look like with James Gandolfini. It's a totally different show.
Yeah. Wait, which character was would he
John Turturro would have been James Gandolfini would have been Turturro's character.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's why he's executive producer on this. He was attached to this to make it before he died.
And De Niro would have been the detective.
No way.
Yeah, that's what they were talking about.
That'd be crazy.
But that's very different. At any rate, Turturro, I love that they do sort of little things, like his whole foot thing that he's dealing with is sort of off to the side of the case, but it's such an indicator of the life he leads. Like, he's got this sort of sad sack, constantly struggling against the world kind of thing.
I've read that a lot of people kind of have a problem with it because they're not sure what to make of it or if it's going to play into it. But I think it's just, it's more of a reflection of this guy has a bunch of difficulties he's kind of enduring. And it's not just that. In this most recent episode, we get a little bit more of a dive into his relationship. He basically got a prostitute or call girl off of a case, a trial.
Yeah.
And maybe in exchange she's sleeping with him?
It seems
Yeah.
No, the thing is, I think that the reason we're seeing all this stuff with his feet and why they're going into such detail of it is it's kind of a gross thing, and they want to present him as being sort of a guy who you look at and you'd be like, oh, you'd cross the street to avoid this guy.
Gritty dude from the street. In this episode, one guy actually says, you look homeless.
Yeah, but he's sort of he's the guy who's actually is fighting for what's right. He's fighting for justice. I mean, he's doing it because he's trying to get by. He's got a bit of a hustler in him too.
I think they do a great job in contrasting him with the opportunist lawyer.
Yeah.
The one who she contacts.
The blonde.
Yeah. She contacts the
family.
The family, and she gets that one under, what do you call it, like paralegal or whatever.
Yeah. Well, she's a lawyer, but she's like a younger lawyer.
Of her ethnicity to go talk to the family. And then she kind of just drops everything in her lap afterwards. It's like totally screws the family over and screws her over. It was an opportunist.
Yeah. But the thing is, when she comes in, I was like, I understand where the family... This is one thing I think is really interesting. This is showing us what it's like to be caught up in the legal system. Mm-hmm. Like,
even just a little bit where they went to the wrong precinct.
Yeah.
And it's like nobody... Their son is convicted for this huge crime, but nobody would even tell him the right place to go.
Nobody told him to go. But, we're seeing Nas in prison and what that's like. And we've seen, Oz and that kind of thing. But this is different. This is a kid who's basically in there... waiting for his trial,
And Oz, to be fair, was very sensational.
It was stylized and that kind of
thing. Oh, there was a shower moment in like episode 3 or 4 where I turned the TV off for a second. I was like,
if it's Oz, it broke you?
Or this show where I was it's about to turn into Oz.
Yeah.
I saw the nudity warning at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, here's it.
And it doesn't necessarily.
No. I made it through it. I pulled my blanket up over my face, peeked over the edge.
But also, we're seeing the. Sort of the legal thing. I mean, when they're talking to his parents and he's giving them the price for how much it's going to cost, and I'm thinking, these people don't have this money. That's an amount of money that they're not going to have in 10 years.
Yeah.
Because their son got caught up in this,
everything's gone.
They are screwed.
Broken.
Like, they have to spend all this money, and he can't get his cab back without filing charges against his son, all this crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah, that storyline.
So when the lawyer comes in, when the opportunist lawyer comes in, she looks like the White Knight.
Yeah.
She says, I'll do this for free, and I'm going to give a better defense than this other lawyer. And for that whole episode, I'm like, I know that this is not the way it's going, but I'm trying to figure out how it's not going to go that way because it looks like the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, story-wise, wanting to kind of root for the underdog, I keep wanting Totoro to just kind of take over and be like, look, I will do this for free because this will get me exposure and be able to move me past being the joke kind of lawyer that I am to actually being a big trial lawyer.
Yeah, but he needs the money.
And so he can't do that. That would be absurd for him to do that.
You know, when I think of his feet, I think of just this theme or this just element that keeps popping up in the show where for the characters that we sympathize with, everything's just a little bit harder for them.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to just get to the courthouse. He's got to wrap his feet up first, put this ointment on there, and then get out there.
And then be ridiculed by everyone and called disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mocked not just for his appearance and his feet, but also for the style of ambulance chaser lawyer kind of thing that he is.
This reminds me of two things, by the way. I want to mention two smaller parts. I think, and I'm not 100% sure, is that Fisher Stevens playing the pharmacist?
It looks like him.
I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a great moment in episode 5 that just was such a great character moment for him. And then the judge, the guy playing the judge, not only is that guy character actors, but the judge has great moments.
Yeah. And it's the guy who just always seems to play a judge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talking about being typecast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty perfect. This episode here, this most recent one, also does interesting thing with Nas. Like,
yeah.
They really go out of their way to establish that this guy seems like a good clean-cut kid that got caught up in a terrible situation.
He's a poor, innocent little bunny.
We're left to assume he doesn't have a tough bone in his body, and he's just being pushed around. And so, naturally, at some point, if you want to make this more compelling, I get that in the story, you're going to make him kind of flip a little bit.
You're going to give us indication that maybe he's capable of violence.
Yeah. And now we have doubt. We have reasonable doubt as the audience because they have him go violent.
Yeah.
In a very big way. And not just violent, but a little bit ruthless as well.
Yeah.
And I see it from both perspectives. I mean, I walked in the door, Randy, and you were like, he did it.
No, that's not what I said. I said, I'm starting to think maybe he did it.
Yeah. Okay. You did say it that way. But I still think that that's interesting because that's what they're doing.
That's what they want.
They want us to not know now.
Yeah.
Because before it's like, oh, we feel comfortable rooting for the underdog. But now he's kind of crossing a certain threshold. And it's like, how do we view him? Because he's in this prison circumstance.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, it's survival. And I can understand him.
Sure.
Just, like, even when he goes and attacks that guy, it was a matter of survival.
Yeah.
It was that guy said what he said to him, and he couldn't just let that go, or else that compromises his relationship with everyone else.
He couldn't do it. Yeah.
Those were his protectors.
But that's not what it was about. It didn't start.
It went into a little bit of a rage.
Yeah. So the other thing is, this show is so good at the what would you do feeling.
Yeah.
Like, I talked about with the family, like, I've tried to imagine, like, being that family and having the lawyer come in and throw these numbers at you. And I've been a little bit on the other side of that with the medical bills.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that where you're like, holy shit, how much is it going to cost me?
I can't do this.
Yeah. And you have to, because it's just the way it is. And I'm sure the legal system is the same way. You're like, I have to do it. But it's like, you get that whole, what would you do? And Nas's whole story of, what would you do if you get stuck in the situation where you're in prison and you have to sort of get by? It's not Orange is the New Black, where it's like a little fun, you know, it's dark, got its darkness, but it's light and they're minimum security and that kind of thing. This is like maximum security, dangerous gangs.
Yeah.
You know, do you throw in with the guy who seems to be in charge of the whole thing?
You know, aspect of that story that I really connected with, and I was like, they nailed this. A roommate I had this last year, he doesn't live at my house anymore, but a guy that my other roommate had lived in our house, ended up going to jail for 30 days.
Oh, man.
Yeah, where he's like locked up for 30 days doing the same thing. And when he got out,
yeah,
like he talked about having one paper solo cup that he used the entire time.
Yeah.
And how like a little scrap of paper was like money in there because you could write on it.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to talk to people. Like yeah. He was like, I don't care what we talk about. I don't care what we do. I just want to like be around other people, talk and get to do. So when, who's the guy from The Wire?
Michael K. Williams.
Michael K. Williams. When he makes that comment, you know, Nas is like, you know, what do you need from me? What he's like, you're, you know, you're a college kid.
Yeah, you actually like, know stuff. I can talk to you.
I want to have a conversation. That's that's what's valuable to me. That also makes me think that there might be, you know, some drama along the way if, you know, he gets used to having Nas around. He doesn't want Nas to leave.
Right. Or he tests his ego.
Yeah.
In an incorrect way. Like, oh, yeah, you know, you think you're smart? How about this?
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
I kind of felt like Nas was testing him when he told him, oh, I've already read this book.
Yeah.
I was like, that lie and just take the
just
book.
Just take the book. Yeah.
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 But they do this twice in this episode where they kind of compromise how we've already been viewing Nas.
Yeah.
And they do that with the assault, I guess.
Yeah.
And then also when Turturro, John Stone, comes in and asks him about his toxicology, I guess, report.
Yeah.
And, you know, they find out that he had Adderall in his system as well.
Yeah.
And it's an inconsistency.
Right.
And that kind of throws things off. And I thought that's interesting because now it's like, I don't know what to fully think. And
right.
It's that little seed of doubt that can make you just look at a person completely differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the show does that so well. Okay, here's the other thing I wanted to discuss, though, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
The very end of this episode.
Yep.
And
Bring it on.
Kyle didn't get to see this. But the end of the episode.
I'm about to go watch it right now.
It goes a little weird.
Yeah.
Because John Stone, he goes to confront this one guy.
Yeah, what was that about?
He gets into... he actually is chasing someone on
it's
foot.
Like, yeah, it's like...
I'm like, what kind of show is this?
It's like suddenly he's the cop or the private detective. And I have the same thought, but you know why?
He's desperate?
He doesn't have the money to hire a private detective to do this job. He's got to do it himself.
Yeah, but he's chasing a potentially violent dude.
Well, he's not crazy about it.
And he's also kind of keeping pace with a guy while his feet are like that. I'm like, bullshit on that.
He's got his Air Totoros on.
Yeah. it ends in a way that was also a little bit ominous.
Yeah.
Because it ends with the flickering light, and I'm not really sure. Because
I'm not sure either.
Which is a callback to the beginning of the episode, but... Why?
Yeah.
I didn't know if you had anything like insight of why they did that.
I don't, unless they were trying to indicate that his lights got knocked out and we're going to see something next time, but I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, it was a little weird. It seemed a little cop style to do for him to be doing it, but I can rationalize it because he doesn't have the money to hire another. I mean, they hired the PI to help him with the crime scene, but I don't think he's got money to hire somebody to track somebody down.
We've talked about our how many great shows we've had this year already. Yeah. Like Stranger Things is just mind blowing. That's such a treat.
Yeah.
And you just finished that, right?
I just finished it yesterday.
Yeah. Pretty good.
My gosh, so good.
Yeah.
It's like one of my favorite things ever now.
Well, I think The Night Of is one of my favorite shows that's on TV.
And yeah.
Like it might be one of my favorite of the year, right, so far.
I don't know if it's my favorite of the year, but it's up there. It's gonna be high on my best of list for the end of the year.
And I'm very curious how they're gonna wrap this up. And I heard like whispers of them considering like a second season. So I'm like, I don't know what that means with this.
I don't know either. Yeah. I'm assuming it's be an anthology type thing.
Yeah.
Well,
right?
It's worth noting that the show that this is based on, the BBC show that I've blanked on, I keep blanking on the name of.
Sure.
Is on Hulu Plus right now. And let me look up the name because I have it. It was
BBC's Criminal Justice.
Yes, Criminal Justice. Mm. I really want to watch it, but I don't want to spoil myself on night of. So I'm making myself wait. Because at the same time, I'm like,
That's what you meant. That makes more
I
sense.
I want more of this. I want like more of this vibe, and I could get it right now. I could watch the whole show on Hulu, but I might spoil some things that are going to happen in night of, and I don't want to do that for myself.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can wrap it up there. I think we've given the audience a good list of shows that they should check out. And we invite you, the audience, to give us recommendations for other shows that we will somehow try and cram into our TV watching schedule.
Yes.
We can do it.
Sure.
Yeah, I should have probably said this before we mentioned that, but a lot of these British crime shows, they can be kind of depressing. Staring at dead bodies all day. I mean, you might want to binge with caution.
Yeah, maybe with hot wings or something. Make it,
yeah. Don't forget the glove.
Kyle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me back. I love chatting with you. This is great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Randy, do you have any particular project you might want to mention?
You know, it's funny you ask that because I do have a show I'm working on.
Oh, you do?
It's called Beach Cop Detectives, a Terriers podcast. Pew, pew. And I am currently recording. I'm recording tomorrow, episode 7. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on interviews. I've got some very exciting people lined up for interviews. So we should have hopefully planning to get it edited and released. The first episode start release into September.
That's coming up. That's next month.
It is. It is.
That's exciting. Yeah. And your list of potential like secret guests is super exciting.
It's looking really good. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for checking out our episode. And once again, you guys can check us out over on Facebook, on Twitter, and we appreciate all the support you guys have been giving us. Until next week, Kyle.
Until next week. Oh, TV Dude's out.
Yes!
Yes!
I finally got it!
He knew it!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.